Welcome to Manage This, the podcast by project managers for project managers. It's a chance for us to get together every couple of weeks and have a conversation about what matters to you as a professional project manager. We'll cover subjects such as project management certification, doing the job of project management, and get inside the brains of some of the leaders in the industry and hear their stories. I'm your host, Nick Walker. And with me are our resident experts, Andy Crow and Bill Yates. They are project managers who mentor other project managers and those working toward that title. Andy and Bill, a lot to look forward to today. Andy, we've had some amazing guests lately.
We really have, and I think today's going to continue that trend. Nick, we're excited to have Dave Gibson in the studio.
Well, let's get right to our guest. I know we've got a lot to cover. David Gibson is the Vice President and Division Manager of McKean Defense Group in Washington, D.C. He guides, mentors, coaches, and develops program managers. His experience includes strategic planning, customer engagement, and business development, and much more. Among other projects, he was the program manager for the Pentagon's MRAP, M-R-A-P, the Mine Resistant Ambush Protected Military Vehicle. David, welcome to Manage This.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
We really are anxious to talk with you about this program that you were involved in. And even though it's been a while, it's such an involved program. It was a major part of your life, wasn't it?
It was. It was a wonderful 7 years. It was a hard 7 years, but it was very rewarding. Probably a highlight of a career.
It's nice to see that you've come out on the other side intact.
Thank you.
So, David, what was your role in this project, your specific portion?
Yeah, so the on a program like this, you know, obviously the government has the lead role, right? And the government, it's an inherently governmental contract. They're managing it. But I was on a team that was sort of a staff augmentation. There's areas we can help. There's areas where we can't help. You know, we can't commit the government to dollars. While I'm talking about the program today from an overall perspective, my role was on the contractor side and in support of the government's efforts. And when I started initially on the program, I was a project officer. I came up through the ranks. I became the deputy program manager and then eventually the program manager. I sat in the program manager on the contractor side seat for about 5 years of the seven. And it was a little bit less than that. It was probably closer to four. And then on the government side, you know, the first government program manager was a gentleman named Paul Mann. The second one was Dave Hansen. And Dave and I came into the program manager, respective program manager positions about the same time. He was a couple months after I was. Such a rewarding experience to work with Dave. Dave was a huge inspiration to me. And, you know, we've continued to keep in touch. We're off doing our own things now. He's managing another Marine Corps program. I'm back working with the Navy at McKean Defense. And it's, but, you know, it's mutually supportive. So
tell us a little bit about how this all started. Give us a little background.
Okay, so if you remember back in 2006, that time frame, U.S. forces were in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we would see on the nightly news the Humvees that were being destroyed by IEDs, and the service members that were dying or being disfigured because of it.
And Dave, what's an IED?
An IED is an improvised explosive device. Gotcha. You know, they're made out of many different things. They're really a poor man's bomb,
right.
Mine. So they the U.S. forces we were losing about five people a day. There was about 100 people a week that were being injured. You know, and that was having its toll both on our service members and their morale, but also on the U.S., you know, here in the States and public perception. So the Marines had become aware of a program or a vehicle that could withstand these blast events. And they started to go down a path to procure them and field them to the Marines. The original requirement was for about 185 vehicles. That quickly grew to 1,185.
And then as the rest of the Department of Defense came online and started becoming interested in the vehicles, it eventually grew to 27,000 vehicles that were delivered in a relatively short time period. This was a huge program, $48 billion program over 7 years.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B.
Wow.
So it was it was certainly a Herculean effort.
Yeah. And where did you come in on the project? Was it already kind of ongoing, or were you there from the very beginning?
So pretty close to the beginning. The Marines that were already familiar with the first vehicles that were bought, they were called Cougars. Actually, there were some predecessors to the Cougars called HEVs, H-E-Vs. They had already had the 185 vehicles on order, and they had just released and received proposals back from industry for more vehicles, and were receiving the first deliveries, like two vehicles from each manufacturer for each variant, and delivering them to Aberdeen Test Center and going into a test program to proving that they can meet what we in the Department of Defense called either a threshold requirement or a objective requirement.
Now, we want to talk about this, of course, from a project management's perspective, or maybe even more accurately, a program management perspective. What's the difference?
So with a program, you're managing a portfolio. Mm. With a project, you know, it's a discrete thing that's built into the programs.
You know, something interesting, Dave, when you look at the way a lot of military projects unfold, for instance, the plane on the C-130, just the wing alone may be a program.
Right.
Within government terminology. Some project managers kind of chafe at that a little bit. We think of a project as being, the overall effort, and a program being a group of projects. So it varies a little bit, but terminology may get a little blurry between the Pentagon world and the world of a lot of people.
Absolutely. And in this case, you know, there were seven different manufacturers, all with their own variant of vehicles. We had what we called assistant program managers, APMs, who were managing each of those variants. You had other program, what we would, you know, in the outside world called a program manager managing, the logistics supply chain for it. But in DOD, that was all one program. And this program in particular had a kind of an Aegis mentality, which is a Navy program.
Yeah.
And the Aegis mentality is you own it all, cradle to grave. Every piece of the program. So that's one of the things that was brought to this program from several of the leaders that came out of Aegis.
Dave, one of the things, there was a motto that came out of Aegis that, and I think it speaks to the way you guys handled requirements, and it speaks a bit to an agile approach that you took. Talk about that motto, first of all.
Yeah, so the Aegis motto that several of us, including Paul Mann, brought to the program, Paul was the first government program manager, was build a little, test a little, learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of what we would call a spiral development effort where we would find the vehicles that would meet the threshold requirement, but we would not be satisfied. We would continue to develop that vehicle, which causes its own sets of challenges because now you've got multiple variants in the field and a very hostile field with difficult supply chains to manage all simultaneously.
Yeah.
At one point, we had about 50 variants of vehicles, but about 300 sub-variants with all the equipment that was on it. So,
however, the beauty in this approach is you were able to get vehicles, trucks in the field, in the theater very quickly.
Yeah.
Especially considering the way DOD projects or programs are run in the past.
Yeah. Right? We had a challenge in the first year to have a 1,000 vehicles in theater by the end of the year, which coming from a DOD program usually takes about 7 years.
Okay.
so we're pretty quick on our feet on that one. But we had other pieces of the program where we had we got the requirement, and 100 days later, we were delivering a very complex truck, in this case a wrecker, built around an MRAP chassis that could be used as a wrecker for these heavy vehicles or these other MRAP vehicles.
Because these vehicles, you're talking like 50 to 70,000 pounds.
And up from there.
Yeah, huge.
So you got a 25-ton vehicle, you got to rapidly deploy it out in the field, and you've got a wrecker on top of that that's got to be able to go get it.
Yeah, because what happened, what we started to see as the base MRAP vehicles were in theater, they were so survivable, the battlefield commanders would not allow their folks, their troops, to go outside of the wire unless they were in a vehicle. So how do you go recover? You need an ambulance. That's an MRAP vehicle. You need a wrecker. That's an MRAP vehicle. That's part of the reason our scope grew as fast as it did.
So you've got a lot of project managers involved in this. I imagine you have a lot of stakeholders as well, and a short amount of time to do this. Tell us about some of the challenges involved in getting that to fruition.
Well, from a stakeholder, we were lucky. Shortly after coming online, Secretary Gates read an article in USA Today that talked about the fact that at that point we were already delivering some vehicles to the Marine Corps, and the Marine Corps was reporting that out of 300 IED events, there were zero fatalities.
Wow.
And so he started doing some fact checking and witnessed some events up at Aberdeen, and through his support behind the program and his prestige of his office, and pulled together what became known as the MRAP Task Force, which met every 2 weeks, all the decision makers in the room that could make a decision on the spot. And not only were they making decisions on the spot, they were reporting what they were doing, and nobody wanted to be that person in the room that was the roadblock, on Secretary of Defense's number one priority program, and he gave us that designation that year. So
with all projects and programs, we're looking for that champion or that sponsor who can really remove obstacles and pave the way. And I have the impression through this and the background reading that Secretary Gates was that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's
he he was very proud of the program.
Yep.
If you pick up Secretary Gates' book, there's a whole chapter on the program in his book. And if you ever have the opportunity to go in the Pentagon, there's portraits of all the secretaries of defense, and he's got MRAP vehicles in his portrait. So,
excellent.
Yeah, he was.
Is he in front of those MRAPs, or is he behind them?
He's in front of them.
Okay.
Dave, I've got a question for you. Just thinking about this from a project perspective, you've got somewhere at the beginning of this, you've got a vision that somebody's laid out, and every sponsor has some vision of how this is going to look at the end. How closely did those two align? Did the finished product? Because now you've got a methodology where you're saying, and let me see if I get this right, build a little, test a little, learn a lot. And so that's a much more agile philosophy, where you're not starting out with all the requirements up front. You're trying to learn and improve as you go. How did those two line up? How did the original vision of this MRAP end up with the final deliverable?
Well, yeah, I think you have to step back from it a little bit and think about it, in the triple constraints, and in our case, cost wasn't the primary constraint. We didn't have an unlimited budget, but we had a pretty open checkbook. From a performance standpoint, survivability was critical. That could not be traded. Other performance requirements could be traded. Turning radiuses, air conditioning output, those types of things. Schedule was absolutely critical, because the sooner you got a vehicle in the theater, the more people would survive, right? Mm-hmm. So, when you step back from it and look at it in that perspective and look at the scope, you can't say the scope is to deliver 100 vehicles or 1,000 vehicles or 27,000 vehicles, because that number is going to change.
Yeah.
You can't say it's to deliver a vehicle that does this, because, in this world, the enemy gets a vote. They're going to change tactics. You're going to have to evolve. And then you have those things that you learn in the test program that typically in a DoD program would be done years before fielding ever happens, but because of our compressed timeline, was done concurrently. And so, you know, we rolled out changes. And so, you know, a lot of people would say that that was gold plating or scope creep. We would say no, because our mission, our scope was just to save lives.
And it was to factor in what you'd learned. I've got a quick question for Bill and Nick. One thing in common with Dave here is I got to work on one project in my life that was, it felt like an unlimited budget. It wasn't, but it was time boxed and money was no problem. Have you guys ever gotten to experience that?
I cannot think of a time.
It's a fun time. I'll say that. It's a different kind of world. You know, you're working late hours and all that, but you don't have any problem getting budget approval. Yeah, so that's a fun thing. But that's not on this scale. I've not done anything anywhere close to this scale.
Yeah. At one point, we went in for a budget request for $25 billion with a B, and Congress looked at us and said, "No, we think you need 30."
Oh, wow!
So, it was pretty enjoyable.
Yeah. It's so different. There, you know, back on this topic of scope and requirements, there's this concept, this 80% rule that came into play here. That is so different for the type of program that you guys were running. And I know there's some literature on Dr. Etters and the approach that she took with it.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to as you're working both with contractors and with military leadership, it had to be a challenge for you guys to continue to say, no, this is different. This is a spiral approach.
Mm-hmm.
80% is what we're shooting for, because there's such a great need for speed. We've got to get vehicles in the theater. How did that manifest itself over the life of the program, just overcoming that challenge?
And also explain this 80%. 80% of what?
Yeah.
So 80% of the performance requirements. So typically in a DoD program, you have a huge document that lays out all the requirements for all the performance parameters for truck, the AC output, the how long can the truck run on the run flats, what size blast event the vehicle can survive. We use the terms threshold requirements and objective requirements. Mm-hmm. You know, threshold is what thou shalt absolutely have. Objective is where you're trying to get. So in the case of a survivability, for example, we would call that a 1x, and I'm not able to talk about what the x is, but it's 1x a certain size explosive. And then the threshold or the objective requirement being a 2x. That grew over time as we learned more about the vehicles. We were able to get that to 4x and then actually 6x.
Mm.
We learned, you know, the vehicles were survivable at first, we thought, because they were high up off the ground, they were heavy, and they had a V-shaped hull. And the V-shaped hull would vent.
Deflect, sort of.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And not just the material, but the fumes, the gases, that is what really destroys vehicles. Mm. And we were able to prove through our testing and learning about the vehicles and what they were really doing that the V-hole also provided a stability, a rigidness to the hull. And so that rigidity caused other problems. You know, in a large event, there could be spinal injuries, you know, when the vehicle, after the event, the vehicle comes back to the ground. So we started working on seats and how does the seat attach to the side of the vehicle, you know, that holds it on, so that you can minimize your spinal injuries. And there were other things in the program, and those were some of those spiral efforts that we learned. Yeah. You know, we knew in our first round of testing that it was better than a Humvee, that it could survive an event, but we got better over time. Mm-hmm.
The thing that strikes me about this is you've got one focus of survivability and continued usage, you know, being able to deflect a blast or survive a blast or whatever the right terminology is. But that's not the main purpose of the vehicle. The vehicle has a whole nother military purpose, whether it's to transport troops or to transport cargo or to perform some mission that you got to factor in as well. So there's all these moving parts and variables.
Yeah, absolutely. The and some of the tactics changed because of the vehicles. I'll use an example: the Brits. Our coalition partners. They had a methodology. You know, if they needed to prosecute a suspected terrorist's house, you know, they would pull up. They would get out of the vehicle. They would bust the door down. They would go inside and do what they needed to do. Once they had these vehicles in their hands, they just ran through the wall and jumped out and started shooting. You know, it really minimized their schedule there.
A big mechanized battering ram.
Exactly. Yeah,
50,000 pounds. Okay. We don't need to knock.
Hey, I got to ask you, were there any surprises along the way? Any glitches or anything unexpected that came up in this project?
Yeah, there were several surprises and things that we learned. You know, one in particular, we used what we called UCAs, undefinitized contract actions. The normal DoD process is clearly, you know, put a contract in place and buy what you need to buy. Because we were moving so fast and we were having changes to contracts to incorporate these spiral efforts, or we were increasing the number of vehicles we were buying, we put a lot of undefinitized contract and actions in place. And the undefinitized contract and actions allowed us to continue moving. We kind of gave the vendor a rule that was, don't exceed this, but get going, and we'll figure out the details later. Hmm. The federal acquisition regulations, which is what DoD acquisition policy is built off of, allows that, but they put a cap of 180 days or 50% of the value in place. We didn't meet those at some point. You know, we just kept going. And at some point, much later in the program, we started definitizing those contracts. And by the time we were definitizing them, the vendors actually had actual costs in. Hmm. We saved like $2 billion by not definitizing contracts up front. So that was pretty unique. The level of stakeholder involvement we had, and the effort they put behind this was huge.
Yeah, Dave, one of the things that just strikes me as very different and something we can all learn from, too, is you guys took a very different approach right off the bat with, we need contractors, we need vendors to submit proposals, mm-hmm. and we need vehicles that we can test and, again, get in the field and deploy as rapidly as possible. You guys didn't just choose one winner, though, right?
We didn't.
How many vendors did you choose?
There were seven vendors that we were using, and they all had their own version. I mean, their trucks were not, just built by different guys. They were different trucks.
Okay. And so they met those threshold requirements. So those were, the Department of Defense could pay for those, could say, okay, we'll order this number from you, from these seven different vendors, and get those out in the field.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a different approach. That had to be, again, how did you manage that given the kind of the status quo that you guys were seeing in the military world?
Well, again, as I said earlier, there were teams that managed each of those major family lines. There was a Cougar was the name of the vehicles that came out of Force Protection in Charleston, South Carolina, and there was a team that was managing nothing but Cougars. There was a team that was managing the RG-31s and the RG-33s and the Max Pros and all the other variants. So you had kind of dedicated teams associated with each platform. They all reported up. There was a very robust communication platform, started with the joint program managers, weekly reports that went out to, it seemed like, God and country, that kept everybody focused on what the priorities were and where he was driving the overall program. And then each of the APMs had their pieces in there so that, everybody was reporting what was going on. Very well informed. It almost seemed at times, if you walk down the hall of the building, majority of us were housed in, that you'd be quizzed and you better know what the priorities were. So, that was pretty interesting and a surprise. I would say also how many vehicles were gotten rid of at the end of the day. You know, we bought over 27,000 vehicles, and, you know, those vehicles, the ones that survived the war effort or was built, repaired afterwards, you know, there's a cost associated with maintaining them for their life. And so, you know, the services have to decide how many of those they want to keep. Well, so they sent, we ended up only keeping about 17,000. Okay. Personally, and, you know, I'm not a government employee, so, you know, I understand that decisions had to be made on the government side, but a lot of those wound up in hands of, you know, colleges and universities and local police forces, where they really have no business. Wow. They're huge vehicles, and you know, it's had to find a home for them.
Yeah,
but
not exactly fuel efficient.
No, yeah. not at all.
Dave, I got a question for you. As you look at this project and you look back on it, was there one particular tool or technique that really proved to you to be invaluable on the project? And I've heard one thing jump out is this whole idea of having the stakeholders come together. Maybe that support from Secretary Gates would be one thing, but you can't always control that. Looking back on it with the things that you could control, was there one particular thing that you felt like was really invaluable to making this project go well?
Well, can I increase that to 3?
Sure,
I'll lump those all into communications.
Okay,
you know, and that's certainly one of the 3. Mm. I'd say the other 2 was credibility. Mm. When we said we were going to deliver something, we met our deadlines, and that's what allowed, you know, Congress to open up their checkbooks. That's what allowed Secretary Gates to, you know, make sure that we continued to have the support we needed. That allowed the manufacturers to have all those undefinitized contracts, you know, in place and assurances that they were going to get paid at the end of the day. Mm. And it ensured, you know, support of each other on the team. That's important.
I have a question about that real quickly that I want to press into. When you have this ethic of saying, I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do, and that's really important to me personally. When you have this idea of saying, I'm going to do what I say I'm going to do, the tendency would be to sandbag your estimates and say, okay, well, now I'm going to set a date that's just truly safe. Then you have this other side that, hey, there are people, there are casualties in the field that are happening. How do you manage all of that? You know, mm-hmm. you're wanting to set aggressive dates. You're wanting to do this at the same time. You want to be able to deliver what you say.
Yeah, well, that comes down to the third option, the thing that I was going to say, which is symbolism and culture. Mm. You know, there was such a culture that built up around the program. We knew the importance of what we were doing. We knew the impact it was having, and the lives that were being saved. And so there wasn't this sense of sandbagging. In fact, one of the stories throughout the program was as we brought the MATV, which was a slightly smaller vehicle as we were refocusing on Afghanistan, had a tighter turning radius. We went out and bought those vehicles, and the at that time, the deputy program manager on the government side, Dave Hansen, he was challenged to have the first vehicles in theater by Christmas. And he looked to the senior official he was talking to and said, well, sir, I think Christmas is in May this year. and the senior official looked back at Dave and said, no, it's still December 25th. And, you know, it was a challenge and it was a stretch goal, but we made it. And you know, it took hard work, but and not just on the government side, not just on the contractor's side, but also on the manufacturer side to make sure that we maintain that credibility.
Talk a little bit about how the impact that had on people and their lives. Because, again, you've got a mighty goal. Mm-hmm. You're trying to save lives. You want to get vehicles in the field, in the theater as soon as possible. But you can only work so many hours in the day. How did you guys keep people focused?
We found more hours. Actually, one of the favorite sayings on the program, particularly on a Friday, was the best part about Friday is there's only two working days till Monday. You did not want to be on a program of this size as the guy that held something up.
Right.
You pushed through it. Mm. That certainly had impacts, mm-hmm. To people's personal lives. Lots of strained marriages because of it. Lots of missed soccer games. I believe most people are coming or have come through those, and that's great to see. But it was really a pressure cooker, and so in a pressure cooker environment like that, unfortunately, we learned the lesson a little bit too late. But the it's important to celebrate the successes,
right,
and to make sure everybody knew what they were doing. One of the things that we put in place, there was a survey that we had done that showed as time had progressed and we became much less of a personality-driven organization and much more process-oriented, that people were losing the sense of what they were doing because they saw their piece as opposed to everything. Mm. And so, we put tools in place so that we had peers recognizing peers and talking about what was done either upstream or downstream of them in the peer recognitions and how that helped continue move the process along.
That's outstanding.
So, yeah, it was a good team.
I recall, Dave, one story where the team back here had seen the results of a vehicle after an event. And the vehicle was, I think the tires were blown off, that was in much disarray, we'll say,
mm-hmm.
and it had been dismantled. However, and everybody was distraught when they saw it. However, the good news was everybody walked away from that.
Yeah.
So that, what looked at first like, oh my gosh, we failed, is no, this is a great story.
Yeah, that was working. Actually in the basement at Marine Corps Systems Command, and the program manager on the government side at that point was Paul Mann, and Mr. Dillon had come down. He was the senior executive, and he showed the pictures, and everybody sat there, in shock. Mm. And when he said, "But no, you don't get it. They all lived."
Wow.
That was a huge event. But I would say also months later, when we did have our first casualty inside of a vehicle, I think that was one of the things that drove us into that spiral mode of we can be better. We can build a better truck. And we looked at everything from raising roof lines, again, for spinal injury purposes, head injuries, to putting independent suspension systems on the trucks and trying to do those things in theater, where you have very strained supply chains and maintenance capabilities. It was a huge challenge, but it in the end, it was a success. So.
Mm. Dave, I've got one other question. When you look at the support that you have from a sponsor and a champion in Secretary Gates, you think about that could be the linchpin, right? That could have been one of the keys to success with the program. However, I'm sure there were people that were against the program as well for whatever reasons. How did you guys identify opposition, and then how did you deal with those that were opposed to the program?
Yeah, it really was Secretary Gates that took care of that for us. Mm-hmm. When the program first stood up, there was certainly detractors and thoughts of wanting to do it the old way and just use what we have, just bolt more on it, use a technology solution like a jammer or a UAV to identify and, as we say, move the boom to left. Mm-hmm. So that the vehicle is not there when the explosion happens. But the Secretary Gates, once he got involved and said, look, this is our priority, Army, Navy, Air Force, these are the trucks you need, it really removed all that opposition. Mm. I would say that the opposition, the stronger opposition we got was after the program was over, which was really disappointing to a lot of us. There are a lot of senior leaders that were, in the program office that are still kind of looked on jealously, you know, for the success we had. I mean, and you know, in retrospect, we won a lot of awards, and looking in from the outside, you know, how did you do it? Well, you broke the rules. You had a task force that allowed you to get decisions quicker, and we didn't have that. Yeah. Well, okay, not everything can have that, you know, and I think that's important for us to understand in a project management mentality. You can only have one number one priority, but, you know, I have heard stories of people that are still in the program office and people coming in, infusing it with new people, and them standing up and saying, you did it wrong. And wow, really? I mean, did you live this? Did you see what we had to deal with? Did you see how fast we did this?
Right.
This was the largest mobilization of the industrial base since World War II. And that's something that was critical too. Yeah. You know, Secretary Gates, when he put his efforts behind this, Sid Pope was hugely instrumental in this program early on. He was the undersecretary for industrial base management. And, I mean, there were phone calls literally to steel manufacturers and tire manufacturers to ensure they had enough production to keep capability to keep up with us. And when they didn't, asking the questions, what's it going to take for you to put a second, a third shift on, to bring a new plant on, and getting those things in place that really enabled the success.
And the success, to me, there's one graphic that you shared with me, Dave, that it shows around July to October 2007 a number that goes down significantly as these MRAP vehicles are placed in theater. And to me, that is that's the gold standard for this program. That's the visual that shows, okay, this was successful. We're saving lives, and we're making a difference for those troops. So I understand there's always going to be opposition, but from the folks here in this room with you, we look at this as an amazing program, and there's so much to be learned from
heroic effort.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Really
thank you very much.
That really does tell the story, and I invite our listeners to Google MRAP, M-R-A-P, and you'll see photographs of this vehicle. That is one tough puppy. And obviously it achieved its goal of saving lives.
Thank you.
David, thank you so much for being with us today. We have a special gift for you, as we always give our guests. You've seen this coffee mug sitting in front of you. You get to take one home with you. Use it with pride every day.
I will put it right next to every other, you know, award that's on my shelf from the program. It means just as much to me that I was able to be here and tell our story, because I think it is an important story. Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, David. And Andy and Bill, as always, thanks for sharing your expertise. A special thanks to David for giving us that glimpse into a fascinating side of project management that few of us really get to see. Well, that's it for us here on Manage This. We hope you tune back in on June 7th for our next podcast. In the meantime, you can visit us at velociteach.com/manage this to subscribe to this podcast, to see a transcript of the show, or to contact us. And tweet us at @manage_this if you have any questions about project management certifications, or maybe you'd like to be a guest on the show. We'd like to get your perspective too. That's all for this episode. Talk to you soon. In the meantime, keep calm and manage this.